Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
My mama would never stand for me stepping out with no traveling man. My mama bought things that he wasn't selling, but mama didn't know and I sure wouldn't tell him.
Back in the Jeff Calkins Show, let's get to this Chris Harrington deal.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and Beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what is this we're listening to?
That is Traveling Man by Dolly Parton. A little dual purpose. Dolly Parton obviously was subject of a big tribute at the Grammys last night. Also, that particular song can be in tribute to all the NBA players changing locations over the last few days.
Okay. We have a lot to get to. You have, by the way, a appreciation, I guess, or reflection on the passing of the Core Four that is up at the Daily Memphian. I urge people to read it. It is fabulous, and I'll ask you about that. In a little bit, I want to ask you about the Chandler Parsons stuff as well, but I've tackled that a little bit this morning already. So I want to start with the game, the first game of the post-Gasol era, Saturday. You were there. It turns out that Mark's been holding back Joakim Noah this whole time.
Could be. I mean, there's a good chance that is the best game Joakim Noah will play all season and maybe for the rest of his career. I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance of that. But it was fun. It was always fun when there's a win at home, regardless of context. But this one sort of was fun beyond that, in that, you know, I felt this, and as I wrote, the story of the game was all the bigs for the Grizzlies. It's like, Marc Gasol is in Toronto that night, and Anthony Davis is on the other team. And the story of the night was Joakim Noah and Ivan Rabb and Jaren Jackson Jr. You know, Joakim Noah had the best game, and Ivan Rabb had some sort of great moments early, and like Jaren Jackson had what looked like it was going to be a bad game, and then he really, you know, he sort of rebounded and had, you know, three big shots to basically seal the game in the fourth quarter. So it was fun.
Yeah, in terms of that, Ivan Rabb is sort of interesting because he's having a nice run now. You were skeptical because literally just his body and skill set does not seem to match the modern NBA. But one of the nice things about this next stretch is we may get to see him play substantial minutes, and he may be turning out to be a rotation player. Your thoughts on Ivan Rabb?
Yeah, Jimmy Bickerstaff said after the game that Rabb would continue to start, even you know once Jonas Valanciunas got active. I do wonder how they're going to find minutes for Rabb, Valanciunas, and Noah. I mean, they're all three of those players are essentially centers. And you know, there's a thought that Jaren Jackson Jr. needs to start playing some center, too. So the Grizzlies' big man group sort of actually got more traditional, you know, with Jermichael Green going out and then another center coming in. And so I'm going to be interested to see how J.B. Bickerstaff sort of juggles all that. But I think as fun as it is to have Noah out there, and I think Noah needs to play, for what they're trying to accomplish the rest of the season, they have to gain more intel about Ivan Rabb and Jonas Valanciunas. So those guys really need to be playing. And so to me, it'd be a disappointment if Rabb is not playing 20 minutes a night for the rest of the season to get a better sense of what you think he is going forward.
So he said he will continue to start Rabb, Jaren Jackson Jr. We don't know whether Kyle Anderson's going to be or what.
Yeah, he said after the game he thought Rabb had earned, you know, earned the starting job. I don't know how long that'll last. It may not, you know.
Right.
I mean, it'll last the rest of the season, but I think on Tuesday night, even if Jonas Valanciunas is available, which as far as I know he's expected to be, I think Ivan Rabb will be the starter tomorrow night.
Well, one of the interesting things is there is a certain youthful spirit. I mean, Jaren and Ivan clearly like each other. Like, there is a certain youthful spirit to this group, and one of the things that you talk about in your reflection on the Core Four is sort of, I mean, life goes on, right? And I mean, is and And if you can already see this, the seedlings of the next era emerging, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, people should go read the piece. No offense to the radio show, but reading is better than listening. So I in all things, and
yes.
So I recommend reading. I didn't really have one through line in what I wrote. I had a lot of different ideas that are sort of cobbled together. But one of them is the idea that, balls life and life goes on, is the name of my last section, that, Mike Conley preceded the core four and grit and grind and all that, and now he is lasted past them, and in lasting past them, he is sort of helping us transition to a new era. I mean, one of my lines is like, whenever Conley leaves, he's not turning off the lights, he's passing the torch. And so you see, I don't know what the future's going to hold. I think we're pretty certain Jerry Jackson Jr. is a major part of that. As far as the rest, is it Ivan Rabb or Dylan Brooks or Kyle Anderson, or is it players unknown still to come? But I think, if people, people who live in Memphis, you like basketball and you like having a basketball team in your city, there are going to be new players to sort of fall in love with and new games to appreciate. And it may never be quite as thrilling as it was in the spring of 2011, but that doesn't mean that it won't be rewarding in different ways going forward.
That was interesting you said that. Do you think it'll never be as thrilling? It might never be as thrilling as it was in the spring of 2011?
Well, unless they go further, unless they go to the NBA Finals, in which case. But I just think there's a different character when it's the first time something happens. The first time they won a playoff game, but the first time you make a playoff run, there was just a certain. Of course, it'll be more thrilling for people who weren't around for that, right?
Right.
I mean, there are people in the future who weren't here for the Grizzlies' run in 2011, but I think that initial spark will always have sort of a special place. But that doesn't mean what's to come won't be interesting or rewarding as well.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting you pointed out in your piece off Saturday's game that Jaren, despite the early foul troubles, came back and made two key plays. I mean, in the end, let's be clear. Jaren Jackson's the main show from here on out. I mean, this is the fun part, right?
Yeah. I mean, I sort of asked JB about that after the game, and it sort of felt like there were games early in the season where he gets the two early fouls, he gets out of seat, and he never quite gets it back. And this was a game where it felt like that. He got two fouls early on, and only played 9 minutes in the first half, was not having a good game until the fourth quarter, really. And JB credited, the work he's done with the assistant coaches and watching film and his development, and he didn't pick up another foul after the first two. I think all of that is probably true, but I also think he got more of a chance than he would have earlier in the season, right? Earlier in the season, he gets the two fouls, he's not playing early fouls, he's not playing well, he may not get back in the game. And even if he does get back in the game, he's deferring to Marc Gasol. And so I think this was, yes, he's probably gotten better at dealing with this, but he also got a clearer opportunity, A, to play, and B, to have the ball and to make the plays late in the game. And I think that's what we're going to see. The shots that Marc Gasol would have been taking in that fourth quarter to try to steal the game were now Jaren Jackson Jr. shots. And to me, that's exciting.
In terms of the other players, obviously we haven't seen Valanciunas yet. We expect to see him tomorrow night. But the others did play. And C.J. Miles, who was sort of literally just the contract, he was just, you needed him as a contract, he had the best game. And it was interesting because talking to John Hollinger, it was the shoot. His shooting has fallen off. That's what's been bad this year. But it wasn't bad Saturday. And he might be an interesting – obviously he was not only not the point, he was part of the price of that trade. It doesn't mean he's going to be bad.
Obviously they didn't make the trade to get C.J. Miles. But I don't – when I wrote my trade analysis, I wrote that he'd been bad but allowed that there could be a bounce back because, A, he's only 31. 31 is not old.
Right.
And, B, his primary attribute is shooting. And shooting tends to be a thing, jump shooting, three-point shooting, that ages fairly well. So I think it's entirely possible that C.J. Miles is better going forward than he's been over the past year or so, and even last season, on average for Toronto last season he averaged 10 points a game, shot 36% from three, and so I don't think half a season of poor play in Toronto at age 31 is some nail in the coffin of C.J. Miles as a useful NBA player at all.
Thoughts on DeLon Wright?
You know, I think it's hard. You know, you're going off one game with a new team, and they haven't, the guys barely know what's going on, and they haven't had a practice. But, you know, I think what you saw, if nothing else, is, and you'll see more, I think, but he's so much better defensively than Shelvin Mack was. And, like, that's a very low bar to clear. But I think, you know, there was a situation with the Grizzlies in the last month or so where Mack had to back out there, like, it would just start, a run's going to come the other way just because the defense was so bad, when particularly when Mack and Jermichael Green recently were out there. And you saw just having the better length and athleticism of DeLon Wright, like, you know, in those minutes, like, really helped, I think, the team defense. You know, he made a few plays. I just think, A, like, you know, DeLon Wright, maybe none of these players, other than Valanciunas sometimes, are going to look up and they've got 20-point games. I mean, you may see that from Valanciunas some if he gets the opportunity, but the other guys aren't going to be like that. They're role-player types. I thought they all, Bradley, Wright, and Miles, acquitted themselves well, you know, in their first game, but they're all going to be secondary kind of players. They're not going to put up big box scores.
Since we last spoke, Chris Wallace spoke, and when he spoke, he said the goal is to convey the pick. As you expressed on Twitter, this should not have been of any surprise.
When I didn't express on Twitter, because it's been so long, I hadn't really thought about it specifically. The first piece I did for the Daily Memphian about the Grizzlies on the eve of the season included a section with the title, The Boston Obligation, which I explained the whole rationale. Not only did I explain the whole rationale for why they wanted to convey the pick, I had on the record comment quotes from Chris Wallace acknowledging that. It is not new. It's the first time he has said it plainly with a camera in his face. I get that. And maybe people weren't really paying attention to that, and I don't blame them. But it's not new. This has been known. Not only has it been known since the beginning of the season, I wrote about it. I wrote about it with an on-the-record confirmation from Chris Wallace that that's something they wanted to achieve this season.
Okay. Be that as it may, he reiterated that the goal was to, and of course it is funny because I get pushback all the time on Twitter from people who say, no, you got to put pieces around Jaren Jackson this year. You can't
well,
wait.
That is
absolutely true, but it doesn't mean you put the eighth piece around him this year as opposed to the number two pick around him in 2 years. Like that.
Well, no, I think it's a complicated question, and I think there's irrational arguments on either side of it. You are like, you know, if you don't have your first round pick this summer and you don't deal Mike Conley in some deal that brings back significant future value, more, much more significant than you got for Marc Gasol, if neither of those things happen, you're sort of wasting a year of Jaren Jackson's development, and that's a big deal. And that's why when we say, like, they prefer to convey the pick, that's not their first preference. Their first preference is to jump up and get the first or second or third pick in the draft. But they can't control that.
Right.
At all. And so it's about choosing among bad options.
Yes, the first person's preference would be keep all their picks. Would be like that would be the first preference. But that ship has sailed. You're going to have to pay now. You're going to have to pay at one point. I actually do think, to me, one of the arguments that I could make is in terms of the long term history, the long term benefit of this the franchise, that their best shot. I can make this argument with a straight face that their best shot is being in the draft and having a 10% chance of getting Zion Williamson, because he is transformative both in terms of, I think, the way he's going to play, but also his persona, fame, star quality, etc. And so you can make, even though it's only a 10% chance, you can make an argument that that 10% chance is their best chance. Like it is a, it's not a 0.2% chance. It's actually a realistic chance. But very clearly, he wants to convey the pick. Do you believe, having watched them Saturday, having looked at the standings, what do you think their chances are of conveying the pick? And the other interesting thing you made is if they finish eighth, they're not in a bad situation because they got three options and two of them are good.
There is nowhere. They cannot fully control their destiny as regards to the draft, right?
Right.
The only way you can ensure that you can make the pick is if you make the playoffs. That's literally the only way to ensure that you can make the pick. When we talk about ninth does is it removes the worst option. There are sort of three options. There's you get lucky in the lottery, you jump to the top four, There's you fall out of the, which I think would be their first choice. There's that you fall out of the top eight and you give Boston your pick now in the late lottery of a bad draft. That would be their second choice. Then the third option is you fall in that 5-8 range and you get sort of a mid-lottery pick in a bad draft and you still owe Boston. And that would be their third choice. And so what ninth does is it eliminates the third choice. If you finish ninth, then that third thing won't happen. Either you're going to convey your pick to Boston or you'll be in the top four. It's not, we got to get to ninth to convey the pick. It's we got to get to ninth to eliminate the worst of the three options. And at this point, their range of possible is really probably 6-10. Like, I don't think anything's going to happen to get them higher than 6. I don't think anything's going to happen to get them lower than 10 in terms of where you are entering the lottery.
Right.
And so to the degree that you can control that range from 6-10, which of those is the best for you? And I think a lot of people have determined that 9 is the best because it fully eliminates the third option, whereas the difference in odds of getting to the top 4 from 6-9 is not that great, right? And so that's the math nerd calculation at play here. It's not that they desperately want to convey the pick to Boston. Right. If they can design Williams when they'd rather do that. There's only so much they can do to really alter the odds of that happening. And so the best thing for them is probably to try to eliminate the worst of the three, you know, possibilities.
If they finish 8th, the possibility is that they still keep the pick. They honestly, the biggest possibility is they did drop to 9 at that point, if you look at the odds.
Right.
But you have a third possible. You have a basically equal chances between jumping up into the top 4, sliding down to 9 and conveying their pick, or having to keep it at the mid level. So 8 is not a disaster necessarily. It could turn out to be a disaster.
8 sort of the gambling spot,
right?
Because you have better odds of getting the two better options than you do, you know, it's your 7 or 6 or whatever. But you leave yourself a third of a chance you get the single worst thing you want, which is the 8th pick. The 8th pick is the thing they most don't want. And so, you know, if you finish 8th, you have a pretty decent chance of conveying the pick, but you sort of limited yourself to that one worst case scenario being sort of a third of your chances.
If you want to convey the pick, that was obviously a big win over New Orleans because they're one of the teams that you want to catch. Where do you think, as you look at the race, how do you see it?
I think the Atlanta thing is sort of gone. That's why I say like 6-10 or whatever. So I want to say, I don't have it in front of me. I think it's Memphis 6, Washington 7. Is that right?
Yeah, Washington, Orlando. Washington and Orlando are both in there. New Orleans are the ones you have to catch are Washington, Atlanta, or New Orleans, unless you think Dallas is going to there something.
I would throw Minnesota into
Minnesota.
The script.
The Grizzlies are at 6. Behind them by a game and a half are Washington. 2 games behind them is New Orleans. 2 games as well, Orlando, and then 3 games is Minnesota, and then 3.5 is Miami.
Right. So I think if you're looking at Memphis, Washington, Orlando, New Orleans, and Minnesota, those 5 teams, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right?
Yeah.
I think more than likely those 5 teams are your 6-10, and they think that 9 is probably, you know, the most favorable spot for them to finish. I would put it at slightly less than 50% that you get there, but only slightly. Like I think those teams are all wobbly, and I think the way the Grizzlies' schedule sets up, I think we've already seen, like over the last week or so, they've been much more competitive. I think what are they, like 3-4 or something in the last 7? I'm making that up, but it's something like that. And I think that's sort of what you could see. It's very possible you'll see that the rest of the way. I mean, I say that they may lose like 8 in a row now, but I expect them to be competitive going forward as long as, you know, Mike Conley and Jaren Jackson Jr. stay healthy.
All right, 2 other things I want to get to. One is in the piece you did at the Daily Memphian, again, I urge people to go read it. One of the nice things about the Daily Memphian is that in addition to sort of covering the landscape, hopefully we have the time and the ability, like Chris did, to put things in perspective in a way that you don't see everywhere. And Chris has written a beautiful piece on the Core 4. So go read that at the Daily Memphian, dailymemphian.com. I've retweeted it. Chris, I presume, has tweeted it out. There was a moment, though, that I just wanted to ask you about. It involved Mark and his jersey. Do you mind telling people about that moment and what you made of it?
Yeah, I mean, I told you about that right after it happened, and I sort of stuck it in my back pocket. I was going to wait and use it, you know, whenever the deadline was over and I wrote whatever piece I was going to write. But the home game that we'll remember is the grand finale of Conley and Gasol, which was the Indiana game, the one where, you know, Gasol planted a kiss on Conley's cheek after the game, that whole game.
Yeah.
The first three he hit in the fourth quarter, I noticed that he turned around to celebrate. He put his hands up to his jersey and then stopped and put them back down. And so after the game in the locker room, after the scrum went away, I pulled him aside and told him that I noticed that and asked him, you know, so what were you going to do? Were you going to pop it or rip it? Because so there's precedence for both, right, in Marc Gasol's history. And he sort of laughed and said, he told me, he said, I was going to pop it. I looked down. I was going to pop it because I thought we were wearing the white jerseys that had Memphis on the front. But when I looked down, it was the blue jerseys with Grizzlies on the front. And I decided, you know, I wanted to pop it if it said Memphis, but I decided not to when it said Grizzlies. And then he sort of raised his eyebrows and shrugged and walked out, which to me was a sign of like the you know, the how unhappy he was with the situation. And even in the heat of the moment, he was making the emotional distinction between Memphis and Grizzlies in terms of what he wanted to proclaim. And so I thought that was an interesting moment that sort of showed where his head was at that moment. It also showed that even as upset as he was at what was happening, he still wanted to proclaim Memphis to the world.
Right. He wants to pop Memphis. And I presume he'll get over whatever it is with the Grizzlies, and we'll have a moment. They'll raise the rafter and all of that. But very clearly he was not happy with the Grizzlies in the final days. And then finally, I put it off. What do you make of Chandler Parsons' return?
I'm so tired of Chandler Parsons. I'm ready. And of course, Chandler Parsons has to ruin Saturday morning.
Right.
Like he couldn't wait to leak that to Shams. Like he couldn't wait 5 minutes. And my understanding is, like, you know, within 5 minutes of the Grizzlies agreeing to this, the Shams tweet.
Well, and exactly as literally, well, here's what happens is that JB, who's supposed to be his big buddy, right? JB is about to do a media availability, and immediately. Yeah, he leaks it to Shams, and so JB has to answer questions about Chandler, and the you know sideswiped again. I mean, everything has to be about Chandler with Chandler. When you say you're tired of him, I think they're tired of him.
Well, and the way the reports come out nationally, one of them was Chandler Parsons will be back in the lineup, and the other one is Chandler Parsons will be back in the rotation. And when I talked to people with the Grizzlies over the weekend, I was told like no promises were made to him about whether he would play or how much. Like he'll be back on the active roster, and the coaches will make their decisions. And so that also sort of puts JB on the spot, right?
Right.
Say I am back in the rotation. Well, that'll be up to JB Bickerstaff, presumably. And what if you're not good? And I presume that he'll be okay initially because he's been out for. I mean, he didn't have a new injury, and he like rested for 3 months. And so if you're ever going to be okay to play, then maybe it'll be like this first game back after the break. But like, I have no confidence how long that lasts. And at this point, is it even productive for the team? Like, I know we've been talking about like they want to convey blah blah blah, but like they're also about who's going to be on this roster next season. And I know Parsons is under contract next season, but he's not going to be an active part of this roster next season. And so I don't want him getting minutes that could go to Ivan Rabb or Bruno Caboclo or you know. Kyle Anderson if he comes back or whatever, right? And so, and then given the knowledge that the team doesn't really want him out there and it's sort of a forced situation, I just think it's a mess and hopefully it won't be too disruptive.
Various people have made the argument, well, no, if he plays well, he might be a trade chip. He's never going to be a chip.
Nothing Chandler Parsons is going to do is going to essentially alter his ability to be traded or not be traded is a function of his contract at this point. It is not going to be about him as a player. And I know like that's sort of a bummer for a lot of people to think about this stuff in those terms, and I get it. And I would much rather write a game story where I'm talking about Joakim Noah running around the court looking for people to chest bump
right.
than talking about like the arcane like details of the collective bargaining agreement. But the reality is when you get into transactional stuff in the NBA, a lot of times that's what it's about. And Chandler Parsons' trade situation is about his contract, and that's basically all.
How do they move him this summer? If they do, obviously at the trade deadline next year, they could move him because at that point he's expiring and there's not much involved. But if they move him this summer?
I think I've already said on your show earlier. I expect it to end up in a buyout. before next season. I'm skeptical of a trade this summer because I think they're already – sort of depends on what happens with Mike Conley, I guess. Like, if they trade Conley to a team with cap room and suddenly, like, you've got a lot more space. But I think right now they're kind of tight even going into next season. And so anyone who's trading for Chandler Parsons is trading for him to give to send back worse contract situations than they're getting. And presumably, if you're taking that on, if you're the Grizzlies, you're getting draft picks, young players for it. The kind of deal they haven't really made, but at some point they need to start making those deals as part of a rebuild. The problem is that with Conley with $30 million and then, you know, depending on what happens with Valanciunas player option, the money adds up enough that I think they're going to have a hard time doing that kind of Parsons trade unless there's other things that happen that shake out more flexibility financially.
Chris, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Sorry we got to you late. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks.
I urge everyone to read Chris's piece at the Daily Memphian. It is one of the things that makes the Daily Memphian the Daily Memphian. I want to tell you that Cspire Tech Movement is taking over the region. Southeast and the Mid-South cannot compete. I mean, we saw this. Electrics leaving and whatever else. Like, obviously, technology is critical to the economy, and we cannot compete for the technology jobs of the future without resources and training. So Cspire is investing in education, infrastructure, and people to make the Southeast and the Mid-South a leader in technology. Team it up with schools and public partners to give teachers the training and resources they need to teach it in their classrooms. They got coding programs going. They got competitions going. All this stuff to help young people pursue careers they never dreamed possible. Also, they're on a mission to deliver managed information technological services to more businesses across the region. The future's out there. Cspire Tech Movement is leading the way. Join the movement at cspire.com/tech movement. That's tech M-V-M-T. We'll be back. We're going to talk about, I honestly think yesterday was the breaking point for Express fans, don't you? I mean, I think they finally had it. How could it not be? This has gone on long enough. We'll talk about this. We'll make it back. The crisis with the Memphis Express. It's the Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Jeff's guests appear on the Memphis Express phone line. Get on board the Express at AAF.com or call 901-881-3344 for tickets. This is the Jeff Cawkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Furniture by Michael Zeller. That's where you save 50 to 80% off retail store prices every single day of the week. And if you mention my name, Jeff Cawkins, an additional 10% off. That would make 60 to 90% off. Do the math. 50 to 80 normally, plus my name, Jeff Cawkins. That is 60 to 90% off. It's the winner of the Best Mattress Store 2015, 16, 17, and 18. They got all the best mattresses, Serta iComfort, Simmons Beautyrest, complete line of Serta adjustable bases. They got furniture, too. Showroom full of furniture from Signature Design by Ashley and Benchcraft. They got a place where you can make your own pillows, for heaven's sakes. Why wouldn't you want to do that? People love Sleepy Z's. More than 500 positive reviews, more than any other Mid-South mattress store or furniture company at the Better Business Bureau. Sleepy Z's located at 2790 Kirby Whitten Road at the corner of Southern Avenue right next to Hollywood Feet. Give them a call. 692-6200. Sleepy Z's by Michael Zellner, where you never wake up on the wrong side of the bet. All right, we've put it off long enough. Jeffrey, just a pathetic showing by our Memphis Express. I've 20 losing, getting shut out.
Mm-hmm.
The same problems that we always see with this
mm-hmm.
team.
Year in, year out.
Have plagued it.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback play?
Yep.
Conservative offense?
Yep.
Just a lack of
ability. A coach that doesn't understand the modern game.
I mean, like, I don't know how much longer we can put up with.
Agreed.
We can put up with this. No, it was an interesting weekend because the Alliance has done well.
It has. It actually, I don't think they could have asked for a much better opening.
It was unbelievably good. Like, it was incredible. Their ratings. Listen, you've had
James Harden against Russell Westbrook.
Yep.
On against him.
Yep.
James Harden against Russell Westbrook got a 2.0 rating.
Mm-hmm.
The San Diego against San Antonio mm-hmm. and Atlanta versus Orlando.
Yep.
Got a 2.1.
Yep. And actually, that fact alone started a nice little social media official accounts war between ESPN and those that were reporting on ESPN's ratings. Because ESPN wanted to point out that that's not true. That game did not get a 2.0. It got a 2.1. But it's fun to also
What's
point
interesting
out.
Too, is that if you go to ESPN's homepage,
yeah.
there's nothing about the alliance there.
Yep. Well, what makes it even better, the reason why the basketball game ended up finishing with a 2.1, when the football games ended.
People flipped over.
It was a 3.0. It spiked. You could see it spike right when the game ended to a 3.1, and so that created the average. But when they were concurrently going on, yes, football won.
It is amazing is that you go to ESPN. Like it clearly was a sporting event of this past weekend. It may have been sort of the sporting event of this past weekend.
I mean, I was in New Orleans, and we were at dinner, and there were two TVs in the restaurant that we were on, and both were on the game.
Yeah.
It was insane.
And so yet ESPN, and literally you can't argue its news judgment. There's not a headline on their homepage.
No, it's an entertainment. It's
an entertainment. Go to their homepage right now. There's not only is there like whatever, it's just like not a headline. Like
there's not a vertical.
There's nothing. That's just not news judgment. It's not news judgment. That's driven by their need for the competition, right? Because they don't carry it.
All right, here are when you go to the more section.
Yeah, this is not the big stories.
Correct.
This is just the more.
Right, no. Here are the columns, the sections that they have of other things. NCAA men's basketball, NCAA women's basketball, NCAA football, tennis, golf, WNBA, G League, boxing, WWE, esports, chalk, analytics, softball.
What if you go
NASCAR,
to the search function
F1,
and put in Alliance
Formula One?
Do they cover it anywhere?
Like they don't even have a heading. They have a CFL heading, which, of course, they have the broadcast rights to. They have a Special Olympics heading. They have a Little League World Series heading. They have a cricket, rugby, and CFL.
I hate to say that is just BS. It is just BS.
If you type in AAF in the ESPN search bar, the first thing that comes up is Dan Orlovsky with a opinion piece saying the AAF won't last long.
Oh, God. See, unbelievable. Well, and did you see our man Kirk Herbstreit basically said the same thing? He said it was JV that won't have legs. That's what he tweeted out. If you work for ESPN, you don't like this, but everyone else seemed to like it. I'll tell you what I liked about it.
Okay.
It moves fast.
Yes.
Like, you realize if you don't have commercials every third
yep.
second, football does not have to take 17 hours.
Yep.
So that was cool.
Yep.
Listening to the voices. Now, there's a lot of F-bombs and a lot of apologies and mm-hmm. a lot of GDs and
yep.
a lot of whatever, but that's good.
Completely agree.
Watching the replay, transparency around
yep.
the replay thing is fascinating.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
But mostly just the pace of the game. And then, honestly, they obviously don't care about the health of quarterbacks. So brutal mm-hmm. hitting is seemingly allowed. Concussion protocol may not be yet a part of the whole.
Well, they have an independent, like they're doing the whole completely fully independent concussion review.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
Okay. That's good.
So, yes.
That's good.
Oh, 1,000%.
Because there were some brutal hits there.
Yes.
Absolutely brutal hits over the weekend. So the truth of the matter is, I will confess, I have been a AAF skeptic
mm-hmm.
from the beginning. And partly it's just because as a Memphian, I've been weary of minor leagues, right?
Sure.
I've just sort of been minor leagued out. We've covered so many of them here. So I've been minor leagued out. But it's pretty clear that people love football. And this is legit football. The quality wasn't, except for the Memphis team, the quality wasn't bad.
The only thing I am concerned about.
And they got a TV contract.
Yes. The thing that I'm concerned the most about is if each NFL team carries three quarterbacks, based on my math, that's 96 quarterbacks. There are not 96 good quarterbacks in the world. And so,
but it's funny, college football has lots of quarterbacks, right? I mean, college football has lots of quarterbacks, and you watch this. Listen, Riley Ferguson was fun to watch.
Yeah.
In fact, here's the interesting – I mean, and Riley Ferguson's presumably – I don't know what he's doing. I've actually tried to contact him. I think we need Riley Ferguson. Because your point is exactly right in a way. You look at Christian Hackenberg.
Oh, my God.
And
he did not disappoint.
It is funny because he's one of the biggest names in that league.
Yep.
And yet he was awful. He's big. He's a big name for being awful. He was 10 of 23. By the way, can we skip the next? Do we have to do ads? Can we take a break? Because now we've run up against this. Can we go right through to the end if I do a spot or two?
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Good. Because I don't want to take a break if I don't have to.
Yes, that's
okay.
Fine.
Because we don't have much time. So, Christian Hackenberg, 10 of 23,
mm-hmm.
87 yards,
uh-huh.
and a pick.
Yeah.
They pull him.
Uh-huh.
Put in Brandon Silvers,
mm-hmm.
first play,
yep.
first throw, pick.
Yeah, but he was getting it out of the way early. Then he hit his next three.
This is not a – so I would ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want?
Okay, so
– No. I'm giving you three choices.
All right.
I'm giving you three choices for the next quarterback.
Okay.
Listen, I've seen Brandon Silvers.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Christian Hackenberg.
We know what they are.
And Zach Mettenberg, fine. He's in the number three. I don't know what Zach Mettenberg must be thinking if he's the number three quarterback on this team.
Is he hurt? I don't
know. I'm going to give you three choices. Ready?
All right.
Riley Ferguson.
Okay.
Colin Kaepernick.
Okay.
Chad Kelly.
You know where I'm going with that.
Let's, first of all, who would be, rank them in terms of best,
okay.
and then rank them in terms of if I don't think you could get. Let's in a hypothetical world where
sure.
they all would say, "I'd love to play."
Yeah, yeah.
Who would you like to see?
I think I would still go Kelly 1, Kaepernick 2, Riley 3, because Kelly was going to be the Broncos' starting quarterback if he wasn't Chad Kelly. Like in terms of ability,
you would go.
He's the best pure thrower.
Kelly, even though Kaepernick is a proven NFL quarterback.
Sure. And you and I have talked about this. Like, you and I talked about this when he played at San Francisco the last year before it was clear he was getting blackballed. Like, he was completely fine on a really bad team.
Okay, so then I'm not sure I agree with you, but then the second question was, okay, so if they would all say yes. Who do you want on the team?
Do you still want Chad?
Yeah, I still think Kelly can play. He's insane, and he's a borderline moron.
No, I want Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick.
Flash.
Yeah, no, not the flash. I want the story.
Sure.
I mean, it would be a national story.
Right.
People would show up. We would be the focus of everything.
And I'm a football guy. I'm just trying to put wins on the table.
And there is no question I want. Can you imagine people would fly in to go to that game? If you've announced today that Colin Kaepernick, he's not going to do it. Like
right,
Colin Kaepernick
doesn't want to do it.
But if you would announce that Colin Kaepernick were playing for, first of all, the NFL runs the AAF, right? I mean,
it's all NFL guys.
It's all NFL guys.
Yeah.
It's Bill Polian. Bill Polian wants no part of Colin Kaepernick.
For sure.
So A, they wouldn't ask, and B, if they asked, he wouldn't say yes. Okay.
Yes.
But if you found out today that Colin Kaepernick was starting for your Memphis Express Saturday night, I think that would put at least in and of itself 10,000 people extra people in the stands.
I would agree with that 100%. And the amount
of all the people who would just support him, support the cause, support the like whatever. It might be the most and then the fascination quality B.
Well,
and then there'd be people there protesting, booing. That would be fun.
Love and hate.
Gosh, it would be so good. And instead, we're going to have Christian Hackenberg, and I hate to say this. So now it sets up this interesting situation where it looks like the league could be legit. Like, just from the initial, I don't want to overreact, but from the initial ratings.
No, this looks
from
like legitimate.
Like
to me, this looks like legitimate development football.
And yet, the league could be legit, and yet Memphis, because we were kind of minor leagued out,
yeah,
I believe that. There is a minor league fatigue in this city. And then because the team, let's be honest, doesn't look like it is one of the more compelling teams in the league. I mean, you look at who is the coaches. Orlando's got Spurrier, offensive guy. San Antonio's got Mike.
God, coach, it's good to have you back.
It's good to have the ball coach back.
God, it's good to have you back.
San Antonio's got Mike Riley, offensive guy. San Diego's got Mike Martz, offensive guy. Salt Lake's got Dennis Erickson, offensive guy.
Arizona's got Neuheisel, offensive guy. The teams that look awful, Atlanta,
yep.
defensive guy,
yep.
Kevin Coyle, Memphis, Singletary, defensive guy,
yep.
and then Birmingham got the shutout with Tim Lewis. He's a defensive guy, too. But by and large...
Tim Lewis also has... So that is a cool story. The Luis Garcia.
Like, that's the
Perez,
perfect...
Yeah.
Luis Perez is the
best. That story was awesome. Like, didn't play high school football... That guy looked like a quarterback.
He did not. So this kid did not play high school football.
That was awesome.
Never played varsity football.
That was incredible.
He walked on at Southwest Junior College, where he was the 9th of 9 on the depth chart. This is Luis Perez.
I didn't even know they had 9 on a depth chart.
This is why you actually have the AAF, right?
Right, exactly.
He goes to Texas A&M Commerce.
Yes, who could forget?
Where he wins the Harlan Hill Award as the best division division player.
I think it's,
and then he's signed, practice squatted, cut, and he could emerge as a legit player. Like,
he's
dealing.
Only 24 too.
He was dealing last night. He literally could be the best quarterback in the league.
Yes, by the way, it's Division II. Yes, no, he by far, in a league full of guys that really struggle to make accurate passes.
Accurate. He was accurate.
He was accurate, and on top of that,
kind of a weird motion, but he's accurate. I like him.
He hit a nice little corner route that was up the sideline. He was standing tall in the pocket. Great play fake awareness, which is always huge for me.
I think he will be in the NFL.
I think that guy has a legitimate chance to be like
a backup. Yeah, guy in the NFL.
That was awesome to watch.
Yeah, no, that was fun. And those are the good stories. That's why. So I actually hope, I don't want the league to take off and the Memphis franchise not to take off.
Yeah, I'm also I had... Some of course now I'm having
you had money on it.
No, I did not. I have this is kind of where I thrive, like watching former MAC quarterbacks, former like third tier or whatever Mountain West quarterbacks. It was so good to see my boy Logan Woodside, the pride, of course, of Toledo, my guy. That remember I told you this is. I go, if you're ever watching a Tuesday night, this guy does not have anything other than a fastball. All he does is throw it as hard as he can every single time. He's back with San Antonio. He looked great. And it made my heart just warm. It was good to see my boy back.
You know what also
make
your heart warm? When you wake up in the morning and you say, Alexa, open my blinds.
Yes. Yes, it will.
And your blinds will come up.
And here they are.
Motorized. And the sun will come pouring in. And your life will be transformed. And I'm not even joking about this. Blinds, shutters, shades can transform your house. Can add style. Can add panache. Can add sunshine. Affordable Blinds in Memphis can make that happen. Chip Wiggins, lifelong Memphian, CBHS, started a local company. Affordable Blinds of Memphis. It's called Affordable Blinds of Memphis because the blinds are affordable. Also fast, also the highest quality. Chip will come to your home. Give him a call, by the way, 753-5822. 753-5822. He will come to your home. He will show you everything they got. They got a beautiful mobile showroom. And you don't have to go wrestle with putting all this stuff up yourself. I'll give you an estimate. If you want to proceed within 3 weeks, you can be done. You can have plantation shutters within 2 weeks at Affordable Blinds of Memphis. They got the highest quality, the best price, the quickest service. Call Chip Wiggins, 753-5822, or go to the website affordableblindsmemphis.com. Let's wrap this baby up. What?
Here's what's coming up next.
What's coming up next?
Yeah, that's if we had time, and I was having
what's coming up next?
I was having to figure it out. Jeff, here is what's coming up next on Jason and John. We got a big day today on 92.9. Jason Fitz is going to join them at 12:25. I'll be hosting the Eric Astein Show. Jonah Jordan, Jason Smith going to join me today. GP will be live from New York City. David Cobb of The Commercial Appeal will join at 4:25. Jeff at 5 o'clock.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back here tomorrow, but for now, our work here is done.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.